Hi there, I'm Lalita Krishnan, your host on episode 35 of Heart of Conservation. As usual, I bring you stories from the wild that keep us all connected with our natural world. I'm back after a very long spell during which I visited the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. I still can't get over those amazing beaches, the old forest, and the incredible species that I spotted there, all new to me but endemic to the island. But the question is, for how long? I can't think of a better person than naturalist herpetologist on ground in the Andamans, Nariman Vasavdar, to answer that and more. You can read his writings on the web, including on ResearchGate, and follow his Insta handle, reptilian_666, to see what he's up to. And do look out for the transcript and links for this podcast coming soon on my blog, Earthy Matters. Welcome to Heart of Conservation, Nariman. Thank you so much for speaking to me about the ecology of the islands. Ever since you guided us through that beautiful Andaman Bulletwood forest by the beach, my curiosity has only grown. So since your first love is reptiles, could you enlighten us about the diversity of reptiles found on the island? And first, do tell us a little bit about yourself and about the diversity of endemic species on the island.
Hi, Lalita. Thanks for having me on this Heart of Conservation podcast. Yes, basically, reptiles is what... let's not put it as reptiles, but wildlife. I was really okay. Attached or drawn to wildlife at a really early age. When in school, I joined this program called the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme program, which basically took us in the outdoors, a lot of outdoor activities, kayaking, camping, some lot of social service fund camps. And of course, it was just being out there, especially because I was a kid from South Bombay. There is not much greenery where I live. But as soon as I stepped out of my comfort zone, the beauty of, let's say, the forests of around Bombay, kind of Lonavala side, kind of, and it took over my life, basically, and I saw my first snake, I remember very clearly over there, just whilst we were camping around. I got inquisitive about this, and it just kind of took over my life, slowly and slowly. Mm-hmm. But nice. More interesting, when my mom comes from a place called Baroda in Gujarat, and I remember as a four-year-old child, she had taken us to the zoo over there. And she knew some of the zookeepers and they had got out some snake. I think it was a python for the kids to touch, me and my younger cousins. And I remember all of us as children were very scared of this. But my mom, for some reason, pushed me to touch the snake. And I touched the snake. And now I think she's repenting this decision of hers. Yeah. Okay. But yes, but I basically took over. That's all I've done for that. Since 2005, I have been involved in wildlife conservation research, different parts of India, from Chennai, Bangalore, the Chambal Valley, a couple of tiger reserves, and now, of course, finally, I live and work in the Havelock Island in the Andaman Islands. But what draws me to this place more is, like you said, all the animals, or more because they're predominantly reptiles and less, the mammal diversity of the Andaman Islands is very poor. So it is predominantly reptiles and more endemic species of reptiles is what we get here.
Okay.
There are over, say, 23 species of snakes, of which nine are endemic. But because it's an island and island ecology is very different, we have terrestrial snakes that live on the land. We have mangrove snakes. We have sea snakes. So like wow. That, there are many, many various species of snakes on the island.
Wow. I haven't even heard of mangrove snakes. Sorry for interrupting. Yeah.
No. But like there are, you see them in high abundance. It's just that people are not getting out there to look for them. Recently, so we have 308 islands in the Andaman Islands. And a lot of the islands are undiscovered. We don't know what is on those islands. The northeasternmost island of the Andaman Islands is called Narkondam Island. It is a dormant volcano, or let's put an inactive volcano. And recently, a snake was found on that island. It's called the Narkondam cat snake, not found anywhere else on any other island, or not been discovered yet.
Cool.
So it's very interesting about, you know, how the islands, individual islands have individual kind of small ecosystems.
That's so incredible. So, speaking of fauna in general, it's a well-known fact that introduced species are a threat to endemic species on islands everywhere in the world. So I just wanted to know, were there any species introduced to Andaman and Nicobar Islands, and what could be, is or could be the consequence of this?
Yes, so of course, invasive species or introduced species make a massive difference to any ecologic environment. Not necessarily islands, but islands face it more drastically. Let's say the invasive animals that are on the island currently are also due to a lot of the animals were brought by, say, the British when they took over the islands and they built the penal colony. So there were only tribes living on these islands initially, the four indigenous tribes. And the British got, say, dogs, which are now everywhere on the island, to give as a gift to the Jarawas, who are one of the tribal community, to hunt the endemic wild boar of the islands. The dogs now have taken over the island, sadly. Don't get me wrong, I love dogs. I have adopted one of the dogs from the beach. He lives with me. But these dogs, let's say, hunt everything, right? Because including the sea turtles. When the sea turtles come up to nest, they not only eat the sea turtle eggs, but sometimes I've seen them sadly even killing the female sea turtles when she's coming to lay her eggs. The baby sea
That's
turtles
so
that hatch,
sad.
the snakes, the lizards. But see, I understand it's not the dog's fault, right? We sadly do not have a proper neutering project on the islands. We have a long way to go on the islands still. It is a serious problem, right? Like small place of Havelock's sake, possibly could be 700 dogs. That is a lot of dogs for a tiny island. So of course, ecological damage happens. Yes, the dogs are fed by this thing, by the tourists, by the locals, but still, it is still a large amount of dogs on a tiny, small little island. But more than that, let's say the other animals that people think, but at least these are street dogs. People think all the animals belonging in the forest also belong then. No, the British were very fond of game hunting, shikar. So they brought three species of deer, which are a barking deer, a hog deer, a spotted deer. Interestingly, they also introduced three leopards to the islands, who in the hopes that leopards will reproduce and will do shikar on the islands. But interestingly, the leopards did survive. Maybe the mangrove forest, maybe they got eaten by the tribes, we don't know. The other out of the three species of deer, spotted deer is the only deer that survived and is flourishing sadly throughout the islands. They again predator on the islands. There is no large mammal, saying no tiger, no leopard, no bear. There is no monkeys, there are no squirrels in the Andaman Islands. So because of this, the deer roam freely. They literally eat the undergrowth of the islands, and an island which has more insects, more reptiles, more lizards, which depend on this undergrowth, gets eaten away. Nothing survives then. The deers, the spotted deer, one species of deers basically or literally is eating the islands alive. Say when they can't, there is no food left on the islands. This happens, smaller islands get devastated completely. The deer, then are two interesting things. One, they wait by shoreline, wait for the tide to come in and hope that some dried leaves will come. If that doesn't suffice, they have adapted now to swim in the sea. Imagine a jungle deer. They're swimming in the sea and going from one island to the other. It is incredible. We've seen this whilst we go diving sometimes.
That's
The deer are in
crazy.
the middle of this. A lot of them must be drowning. I know it's we like, see, as conservationists, sometimes you have to put a heavy heart on your shoulder and say, yes, it's okay if this specific invasive animal doesn't survive, right? For the better good of the environment. A lot of people will be against what I'm saying, but I stand my ground to say, yes, sometimes for the betterment of the entire ecosystem, it is okay if these animals are maybe eradicated, sent back to mainland, whatever. Because once islands lose their endemic fauna, it is not coming back. One. So we have lots of, if you have a bullfrog, everyone thinks it's a frog. It doesn't do much, but it grows big. There are scientific papers of it eating chickens. I have written a scientific of a bullfrog trying to catch and eat an endemic bronzeback of the Andaman Islands. No, so it is a very, like, it's only a frog, but it does a lot of
Yeah.
damage, and it is empty.
Sorry, you did that frog eating the chicken. It's like crazy, or the
Yeah,
bronze back.
my friends have documented this. There's a research paper on this, of how invasive, like what damage these things do. There are many
Okay.
of them. Rats, we don't know, right? Like, we don't really know cats, rats. The cats do damage to the ecosystem. My friends have cats, and the cats, when they come to my home, they're bringing emerald geckos, skinks, lizards, to the house all the time.
See, we don't see
It
these
is,
things.
yeah, but yes, of course. You see, we live here, right? Long, and we don't go home much. Like, this is home now, so it's a massive. I am seeing the difference. Forget that. Just the invasive species, the amount of construction that is happening over the years has also drastically driven the
Okay.
endemic flora fauna down.
I mean, it's so strange. Like, you think, a deer is ha harmless, or a cat, okay, it only kills rats. We don't think what else it can do.
Yeah,
So,
a lot of countries, Australia for that matter, has a rule. They can shoot the feral cats or kill the feral cats, right? If we start this in India, sadly, our laws are not open for this, right? Where we need to get rid of the cats and the dogs. Have this conversation with people who are not thinking logically. It is just a battle, a nonstop battle that people like me have with them. So we just bring this up because it's a never ending. The conversation topic never ends, right? It's always a nonstop. No, this is that. This, but from an
Yeah.
ecological, a scientific point of view, you can't. Everything can't be driven by your heart. It is sad. I
Yeah.
agree. But
Yeah.
unfortunately, for the betterment or the better of the other animals that belong to this place, sadly, a lot of these animals have to be moved out of here.
But thanks for opening our eyes. Maybe people who make the policies and, are listening, and somewhere it'll change somebody's mind and they do the right thing. I mean,
Oh, we hope
you
so,
can't.
because now you can't force this on anyone, even including, say, my friends, right, who are nature oriented. But even them, for them, no, this is what it is. The dogs, the cats need to be here. You cannot even bring up or the deer, or the frogs. Like, let's kill the frogs. They are invasive. But these topics are like you can see the blood boiling in them when we bring these topics out.
Right. Yeah, it's a difficult one.
Yeah.
All the locals know you as a snake rescuer on the islands. I quote you now, no rescue is the best rescue. What do you mean by that?
So also, yes, I never really did this snake rescue anywhere else that I've lived.
All right.
Yes, in places that I lived, in smaller places, there's a snake in someone's house. Yes, I'll be more than happy to remove it for them. But I never did this snake rescue thing anywhere. It was the same
Right.
over here. Like, there was a snake in someone's home. I went, helped out. But now Havelock is like a smaller, tiny, or maybe a little larger village. The entire Havelock. So literally everyone knows. Everyone from one snake rescue to the second to the third, now it's become everyone knows this. But however, I rather not do this, because this is not giving anyone a chance to understand how to live with snakes, right? This place always had king cobras, always has a lot of snakes. But as we are going, as the say, as again, as tourism is a double-edged sword. As the tourism is spreading, people, the locals, are selling off their land for hotel chains, of course, right? And there are literally maybe over 100 accommodations now, or places to stay in Havelock, 40 plus dive shops, over 100 restaurants. So many of us from mainland also living here, which basically means more houses are constructed. People are cutting deep into the forest. And with that comes, if you're cutting into the forest, there are more snakes entering people's homes. What tourists are seeing are just the two main roads, but a lot of side lanes. I get baffled where these side lanes are going. I thought I knew Havelock well, all the roads, but no. Every time there's a snake and I go to these places, I am shocked that the houses are deep, deep, deep into the forest. They have cut the forest down. So, yes. There is no option for the snakes but to seek refuge in those
Right.
houses now. So this is
Wow.
what's happening. So I basically will not catch a snake or remove a snake from, unless the snake is in the person's house. When I mean in the person's house, I mean literally in their home. If it's in the garden, in their bagicha, I will not catch it because that is where the snake is supposed to be. I understand it's a king cobra. It could be, it's a highly venomous. It's the world's longest venomous snake. But there has to be some learning curve. Otherwise, every snake they see is like, come and catch it, but I don't go. Unless it is in their home and it is a situation where I have to, I will remove it. Otherwise, I tell them to wait, have a look, keep calm, take it easy. And if the snake was in their home, yes, I will go. But otherwise, I don't. So what I mean by this is, there is no need to catch every snake. What are we doing with this, right? Again, snake catching is not a big deal. It's basic, very basic understanding of snakes. I don't know why people make this big hoo and show about it. You can catch a snake. Then what are we doing with this? We are relocating them somewhere else. This is not conservation. This is not research. We are literally removing a snake from A and just dumping it at B. And think that, yes, we've done a great job. We've saved a life. But we don't know if that snake survives where we are literally releasing it.
Okay.
There has been many debates, many scientific papers, research on this translocating of snakes. They are saying try to release the snake as close by to the rescue site. Now, think about it. Where I live is in Havelock. There are king cobras. Like I said, my problem is not the rescue, is the release. Sometimes I feel very bad that I'm releasing the snake a kilometer half away, but there is no option, right? Where do I release these snakes with so much construction? So that's why I feel like if not required, I will not do anything. A lot of times I get calls, snake is in the home. I say, okay, give it 10 minutes. Let's see what happens. And it goes away by itself. There is no need to run, jump, catch the snake, put pictures on, like free handle snakes. It is not necessary. And this is becoming a massive trend on Instagram now, where a lot of the guys, especially in Bombay, Pune, India, free handling, which basically means picking up snake, venomous snakes with their hands, not using equipment, getting bit on their faces, kissing cobras. It is not required. There is no need for this bravado, for showboating. Yesterday or day before, two boys have gotten bitten doing these stunts in Bombay. And what happens? They die, they lose their fingers. What is the point of this? There is no point of this. Yeah, do it. If you really have to do it, yes, catch a snake. But then go immediately and release it. A lot of guys keep the snakes. They keep them unethically. They have plastic bottles. They don't release them for days. And they have 1,000 excuses for this. You catch a snake, it takes 2 seconds. What I do, I can catch the snake, I release it immediately. And then I go home. I don't need to take the snake home. I don't see the value of taking that snake home. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, these are my thoughts. And, you know, and again, everyone has different thoughts about this. And a lot of people feel that catching a snake is conservation research, but it is absolutely zero. I think we are actually hindering it and not really giving it a place to go to, actually.
That's a lot of new information. It's interesting, but it's also scary and enlightening. First of all, they have to learn how to catch a snake. I hope they don't follow
it's
YouTube videos.
That is all easy, but they see all these YouTubers picking the snakes up, the cobras, the vipers. Why would you do this? Right? It is just, you're literally playing, it's like playing Russian roulette. Nothing happens 100 times. That 101st time, you can die. You could lose fingers. You know, why would you want to kiss a cobra? The snakes live in sometimes the most filthiest places, gutters, septic tanks. You're kissing this. Great. Yeah, no.
Sad. So how often do you get called, to get snakes
really
out of the house?
It really, not luckily, it's not like a full-time thing. I don't want to do full-time. But mostly, king cobra breeding season is now mid-February to April, May, maybe. So this time, these 2-3 months is more. Of course, the random one here and there. But sometimes, say maybe twice in the day, sometimes not a few days. It's a very erratic thing. Interestingly, the snakes that I have rescued from the homes over here are either king cobras or rat snakes. I've never rescued a pit viper from someone's home crates, none of that. It's only been either kings or rat snakes. No other snake, interestingly.
Right. We have rat snakes here also. In fact, one
Yes,
has
and
climbed my door trying to get at whistling thrush's eggs. There's no way to prevent these situations, no, in places like Havelock, snakes will go into your house. I mean, I don't know.
no, there are, of course, no, it's the basic. Doesn't matter if you're in Havelock or anywhere else in the world. You keep your surroundings clean, keep your litter, don't keep clutter around, don't chuck your organic waste everywhere. They're the basic same rules you follow anywhere.
Okay.
Is of course, if you're living in the jungle, more likelihood, and it just comes, there could be a chance, but less likely if you keep your place, your area litter free, basically.
I mean, I never thought of a snake attacking your garbage.
No, it is going for the mice, right? What is going at the
Right.
garbage? The mice, the
Mice.
flies, then yeah, and then the frogs, right? The geckos go for the flies. So prey and predator come wherever there is food, right?
Right,
If there
right,
is
right.
food for, say, chuck mango outside, right? A rat will come to eat it. Following the rat, maybe a snake will come. Like likewise, a gecko may come to eat the juice. Seeing the gecko, another lizard may come. Seeing that a snake may come, right? So it's a circle. And if it is
Right.
near your home, why wouldn't that animal? And there's also some wood piles or tin sheets lying around. It's a perfect habitat for reptiles to live on. Where am I finding
Right.
these snakes? On tin sheets, in wood piles, because sadly the locals are dumping all these things. So day before there was a rat snake under a pile of wood. I literally
Okay.
told him I removed it from one pile of wood, I put it in the next pile of wood. What do I do? Where I just, that's all. Like if because there
Right.
is so much clutter around, there is no option.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same principles anywhere. The more clutter around, more hiding spots, more prey base, more reptiles.
Okay, Narman, thanks for that. Let's move on. So, Narman, have you ever been bitten by a snake?
Yeah, I've never been bitten by a venomous snake because I always, of course, it's always been luck, but safety is my priority for myself and the snakes. If I feel like this is also all snakes going to be caught, like I said, I'm only doing this when it is in a place where there's a snake in someone's home. I will always go back. I will not just catch a snake if I don't have equipment. I will take my hooks, my snake bags, tubes, whatever I need. I wear boots. Whenever I need to go for a snake rescue, I ensure I have all my things with me. Even if the locals are telling me it's a non-venomous snake, I will judge it only when I see the snake. So many times it's a rat snake and I've gone with all my gear and then I pick it up. But yes, because I can identify venomous and non-venomous species, non-venomous snakes, yes, I have been bitten a few times, but it's because I know for a fact that it is a non-venomous snake. Getting bitten by,
Yeah.
let's say, or everyone asks how much does it hurt? By, of course, it's basic sense. A smaller snakes hurt less, larger snakes hurt more. Let's say if you get bitten by a non-venomous wolf snake, it hurts a little bit. Maybe not even maybe one drop of blood will come out. But if you get bitten by, say, a python, yeah, it could even tear your skin. You may even need stitches if it bites you bad that badly. If you could cut an artery, So yes, it is. Even smaller snakes, right? They could hurt you if it bites you and cuts one of your arteries, right, in your hands. Once it's happened that more than once, like, and all of us who do this have experienced that snakes sometimes when they bite us, they leave their teeth break off in our hands. That's why we tell people if the snake is biting you, don't pull the snake off because A, the teeth break. The teeth will regrow in the snake, but that it is painful for the snake. Understand? Even the snake has emotions, right? Just because it's not like a mammal or a bird, it can't speak out. It doesn't mean it doesn't get hurt. And more than that, sometimes these teeth break off and they go into our skin, into our epidermis. And then the small wound heals, but this tooth is left in our hands or feet or wherever in our body. And of course, it's a foreign body. Imagine a foreign particle in your body now, right? So your body slowly, slowly starts pushing it out. And like once the tooth got stuck in my finger hand somewhere. It was when it was coming out by naturally, it was hitting one of my veins. So it's really painful. And then you literally have to kind of dig into it and pull it out. So all this is sadly, it happened. But like again, going back to your question, I've not been bitten by a venomous snake ever. Again, safety is priority.
It does happen. I'm
My friends was
super careful, more careful than what I am.
it does happen, then they have gotten bit.
It's also, you get overcomplacent, overconfident. You've been
Right.
doing this for 10 years, now you know what you're doing. You're like, ah, I don't like this, so I'll just go and take this cobra up like that. And that is when these accidents happen.
Happens sadly.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and we are
Wow.
seeing this more and more of late. So
Yeah.
like when we friends go out looking for snakes.
This is what we do. It's called hoping. We go out looking for snakes. We do holidays where.
We are just going out to different countries, maybe even abroad or even just in India, trying to find reptiles of that area.
Great. I mean, I didn't know teeth, snakes could grow their teeth back, but I don't want to test that. You wrote a book called Turtles, Tortoises, and Terrapins of India with Sushil Chikne. So that must have
Yes.
been really interesting project. Would you like to tell us some more? And anyway, what's the difference between the three to begin with?
So the basic difference, let's put it so, turtles, everyone thinks when they see a shelled animal, it's a turtle. That
Right.
is the first thing that people come, but of course, they're like the book, there are three. There are three, they're lots, let's put it this way, tortoises are land animals. Tortoise is a very, let's put it, very basic distinguishing keys. Tortoise have feet because they're land animals. Tortoise's feet are like elephant feet, exactly like an elephant feet, of course, smaller. Tortoises can also swim in the water, but they can't swim the sea or they can't swim a river. Little bit, yes. Now we've realized that tortoises also are getting into water bodies and floating to certain areas. But say in a general aspect, tortoises are land animals.
All
You
right.
will not see a tortoise. They will drown for extended periods of time. They cannot be swimming in the sea or in sorry, in a pond or a lake. They will, as soon as you put
Okay.
them there, they will struggle a bit and they will drown. So tortoise feet is a tortoise. Sorry, elephant feet is a tortoise. Turtles are two now. Turtles, there are freshwater turtles that live in streams, rivers, ponds, wells, and there are marine sea turtles that live in the sea, of course. Again, these two are different as well. I cannot put a freshwater turtle in the sea, it'll die. And
Right.
likewise, a marine turtle cannot be just put into freshwater. It will also need, it can survive, yes, when you do a treatment and all, yes, you can manage to clean it out to do this, but it generally, it needs to live in the sea.
Okay, just
So
like
it's
most
easy to
river
distinguish.
fish and sea fish, yeah.
Exactly, river fish and marine fish, exactly.
Money.
Yeah, but they are very simple distinguishing features between a
Right.
freshwater turtle and a marine turtle. Freshwater turtles, in between their toes, they have like a duck's webbed feet.
Okay.
So they have duck webbed feet because they need to swim in the water, right? So their toes, in between, there's a webbing, and that makes it a turtle. A freshwater turtle. A marine turtle has completely different legs, let's call them legs, structure. They don't have those toes, they have fins, flippers. Right? So, as you see, so it's very, very different structure compared to a freshwater turtle. The third
Right.
one, which everyone gets confused, which is a terrapin, is basically a river turtle who can also survive in brackish water. Brackish
Okay.
water means where. Is mangrove area, let's put it that way, where fresh and salt water meet. So there are some turtle species that can survive in that water as well. They're not going in the sea, but they can
Right.
survive in fresh water and this brackish mangrove area.
So even in the Sundarbans and all, you'll find them.
Yes, in the predominantly that's correct. In the Sundarbans, there is a specific species called a Bata Gurbasca that lives in that area.
Okay, cool. So
Yes.
basically, those with feet on land and the rest more or less in water and what mostly water.
Mostly water. Yes.
Thanks. Do you want to tell me more about your project, your book?
So the book was with me and Sushil because I did I used to work with turtle survival lines, and I understood I should work as a freshwater turtle biologist. I understood turtles, and there was a lack. There's always everyone in the reptile world is more inclined towards, say, snakes, crocodiles, lizards. Very few people are inclined towards turtles, is what it was the same with me as well. We found turtles boring, slow, sluggish, not dangerous, just, you know, like, okay, whatever. But once I started doing this work, I realized that, wow, turtles are really interesting. They have character. They have personality. They are stunning. Some of the turtles, like the one I used to study, it was called the red-crowned roof turtle or Batagur Kachura. It is absolutely a stunning animal. The males have yellows, reds, blues on their face. It looks, a lot of people have asked me when I showed them a photo of this male turtle in breeding colors, if I have painted this turtle. It is that vibrant, you know, and very cool animals. Ecology of turtles, especially the river turtles, is something else. And some of them are giants, like serious giants, and just as tough to catch. Or because we used to put transmitters, you know, did a lot of stuff. We had permits for all this stuff. Sometimes tougher to catch than a snake, you know, more tough, you know. So like, we always thought turtles are sluggish. Everyone thinks turtles are sluggish. But when some of those turtles want to go, they are going and you cannot stop them. Yeah, it is mad. It was a very, very interesting area to live in and to understand how this works. Also, there was no book, like a field guide, you know, there's always field guides to, say, birds, to snakes. No, but again, like I said, because turtles is this topic of, no, it's okay, not many people are interested. We thought it is the need of the hour to have a turtle book out there. You know, and like this is, there is books, there are flip cards, but not a field guide which covers even marine species. So yes, it took some time. We did this during COVID. And it took about a year and a half to 2 years to basically complete this book.
Right.
It was a fun learning experience as well, of course.
So, Nariman, we are down to question 9. And so I was wondering, could you share, you know, would you like to talk about a little bit about the bulletwood tree that, that you took us through that forest, and it was so beautiful. Would you like to give us some information about that? I'm so fascinated.
Certainly. So the bulletwood is also here in the Andamans. It is a predominant tree of the Andamans. It is called sea mahua. It is not the mahua of Madhya Pradesh, where you get liquor from the flowers. This is completely different. Even the scientific name is different. This is more of a littoral forest, basically, which means it grows by the seashore. And like we saw, right? You see the giant trees living in sand. These trees can be 500, 600, 800 years old, extremely hardwood trees. So when we walk through the forests of Havelock or any of the Andaman Islands, you are noticing a lack of termite mounds. There are termite mounds, of course, but a lack of termite mounds considering the fact that this is a rainforest. It's not a rainforest of, like, say, the Western Ghats of India or South America, but nevertheless, it's still a rainforest. And these trees are very tall, like we saw 130, 150 feet tall trees. Few termite mounds because the termites can't really make holes in these trees. It is very interesting. Like, forget the living trees. We get cyclonic weather. Trees rot, trees fall down. The termites have noticed, yes, of course, try getting onto the trees. They do get onto the trees, but they give up and they go away. I feel that this wood is too hard for the termites to make holes.
Wow.
We get another insect called a wood borer. Yes, that sometimes makes holes, but which is also found in Madhya Pradesh, but not like the damage it does to the sal trees of Madhya Pradesh, where it kills the trees. It doesn't manage. It eats the other trees, which is okay, the coconuts, the supari trees. You know, but I think the hardwood trees of the Andamans, it is something else. Here, there is also a wood called superior wood. You know, which, like we were taught softwood, hardwood. There is superior wood, you know, which is extremely hard, where you can't put a nail into it at times easily. You know, so even the sea mahua, the bullet wood, which is called, you initially, they would burn the base and cut it with an axe.
Now they need to use a chainsaw, and the chainsaw takes a couple of hours to cut a tree. You know, it is incredible. But also, I read somewhere that when the British or the tribes had, of course, this history of the Andaman sadly is not nice. It is very, you know, it is a lot of unfortunate events that led to the British being here, them treating the tribes very ruthlessly. Japan was your same kind of history again repeating itself. But interestingly, the tribes had laid a trap for the British, and someone told the British about this trap. If and the tribes, imagine if the tribals had won this battle against the British, we may not have been here right now. Right? History would have been different. But apparently, they made shields out of this wood. I think I read in some of the old books somewhere. They made
Really?
shields out of this tree, and they thought that it would stop bullets. Of course, it can't stop bullets, it can't stop cannonballs. So the tribe literally got decimated in this action. But interestingly, it could be also be called the Andaman bullet wood because they thought that it could stop bullets.
Having seen the tree, I mean, in just in awe of it.
Yeah.
Narman, my last question to you is, and I ask this of all my guests, is do you mind sharing a word or a concept or, you know, that'll help us, that'll add to our understanding of the ecology of the Andaman Islands?
Yeah, so like it's the same thing, like not just the this let's not say just not the Andaman Islands, but anywhere, right? Islands
All
are
right.
affected very easily. The change that happens in islands, not just with the flora, with the fauna, happens at a faster rate than mainland, any larger space, right? So let's just put it like I said, it's the problem with let's say the Havelock is it is a touristy island. The only source of income that the Andaman Islands as a whole has is tourism. But sadly, we don't have sustainable tourism on the islands. There are rules, there are regulations, but again, it's India. We don't really follow any of these things. A lot of resorts are now claiming to be eco resorts and green resorts, but it is not possible. It is not humanly possible to have an eco resort without, you know, damaging the environment. So this is just like a little thing they put up, put a nice website out and say we are eco resorts and we are saving the environment, but actually none of that exists. Not just here, anywhere. Even just say tiger reserves, right? Where everyone is claiming to be an eco resort, it is not possible. We generate waste. We consume electricity. You know, it is not possible to have an eco resort basically around us unless you are using solar panels, you are doing water harvesting, you know, you're putting groundwater back, you know, you are not creating any waste, which is humanly not possible if you're running a property, basically. No matter what, all the resorts, no resort, all the resorts will tell you, all the big resorts tell you, we are doing eco management and waste management. It's all just rubbish, sadly. But
Can
islands, like I
imagine,
said, yeah, of course, islands get so now, sadly, where was this? Where do you think this waste is going, right? So island ecology gets damaged very fast. We are not seeing this waste. I myself am producing waste, right? We are cooking, I have a dog, he needs milk, he needs XYZ, right? Even myself, right? We all have to buy stuff to survive, right? So on a small island, from the population to say 5,000 living over here, now so many of us characters from mainland live here permanently. Plus the say 3,000-4,000 tourists a day are on this island. So if 3,000-4,000 people plus us 15,000 or 10,000 people need to eat every day, imagine the waste of 10 to 15,000 people a day on 135 or 113 square kilometer island. So now we have a dumping yard, a landfill on an island. Imagine where they're just burning the waste. It's like when facilities are poor, infrastructure is poor, right? So we need to. I thought that the hotels would come up, you know, take their waste back, do something, but no, sadly, no one does these things, including the big chains. Forget the small boutique resorts. The big chains don't really give a shit. Like the small ones are really not bothered about anything, right? So this is what happens, right? Like as a tourist, you're not seeing the impact that tourism does. Don't get me wrong.
everyone's income depends on tourism. But there is a way of doing this where, say, like in a tiger reserve, right? They have only XYZ number, like so many number of jeeps can enter the tiger reserve at one time. Have a system like that somewhere, you know, where only so many people allowed on an island per day. Let them be longer stays, absolutely fine. But don't have so many ferries coming in and out, right? Groundwater. Why? What is the natural resource of an island? The fresh water we have. The fresh water is already getting depleted. Right? We are seeing tankers already come to Havelock. Already.
Really?
Right? This is so, like, where I live is a little bit low-lying. The mangroves are 20 minutes away from me. On certain, yesterday, when I came back to have a shower, I can smell the mangroves, you know, like in the kitchen. You know, it's like that ammonia water, that nitrogen fixation that the mangroves do. You can smell it. The ground, this, the water is, you know, it's, and it's not summer, summer. Summer just started.
Right.
But now the islands are not getting a break, right? After COVID, all the hotels are doing this, not giving the island a break. It's greed, sadly, has become a very big part of the islands where everyone is opening. Hotels are opening as we speak. So groundwater gets tapped. Water is getting reduced. It will become a problem later on in life, which a lot of these people are not seeing right now.
Right.
Havelock is blessed. We have waterfalls. We have streams. But right now, it's all dry. There is not so much water because, the water is drying out. Absolutely. The waterfall which I go to, I went to last night, and it is dried out, completely dried out. There's no water.
That's depressing. Don't see all this. Thanks really for opening your eyes. Sorry, I have one more last question. You know, you also spoke of, when we were there, you spoke about diesel buses.
Yeah, so the main grid of the island is a diesel generator. But now we have electric buses over here. So the diesel generator, they burn diesel to convert it into electricity to run the electric bus. It is the most absurd thing. Yeah, no, it's such a stupid... This is sustainability, apparently. This is what... And this is just like done. And like there is no... Everyone here is just thinking it's a stupid thing to do, right? So we are... When we have buses, of course, we have local buses, you know. There is local buses, local transportation. Why burn diesel to convert it to electricity, to put it in electric bus and say that we are doing green or whatever the rubbish it is called?
Right.
You know? So this is the things that we are like, this is just for the namesake of doing it, we are causing. So now, of course, there has to be a bus charging station, a bus, you know, all these things have to be put up on the island now.
Food for thought, lots of food for thought. Thank you so much.
No, my pleasure.